see through your eyes.
That's Bob Dylan, and it's Masters of War. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And our guest now is Michaela Leivas. And Michaela is a student of... Well, Michaela's with us. I'll ask her. Michaela, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I started to mention your academic background, and I think I'll let you do that. You're working on the issue of you're working on a paper about refugees. Is this for a master's thesis?
It's part of it. Right now, I'm taking a self-directed reading course in preparation to get approval to do Kashmir as my major research paper, but. The reason I went to Kashmir was the human rights delegation and part of a course that I'm doing with another professor, which is a self-directed reading course. For a self-directed reading course is you have to reach out to a professor and get their approval, and then you basically propose what the course should look like. So it's not a course that's necessarily available, but it's a course that you can kind of design with a doctor at your institution.
Well, I hope more people follow your in your footsteps. It's a very important subject for the population to understand. And you had a column in the Sunday Toronto Star. It is titled "My Christmas in Kashmir Refugee Camps."
Yeah.
And the first thing I agree with you, the first thing you called attention to is you said that you were astonished to learn that actually the world is basically unaware that there are refugees. I think another term is displaced people from Indian-occupied Kashmir. And they are in the... area, it's best known as, I'm trying to look at Azad Jammu, Kashmir.
Yeah, AJK for sure.
And this is the divided, disputed territory. Why is this? Why aren't we aware of this phenomenon?
The whole region, of course, is disputed, but I think Muzaffarabad, not necessarily as disputed. I think, Kashmir, AJK Kashmir, has quite an independent government to Pakistan and to India. So I don't necessarily think that Muzaffarabad and AJK in general is disputed, but I think Indian-occupied Kashmir is disputed. And I think the reason that it's disputed is because it's resource-rich and it's beautiful land. It's similar to Palestine, right? I mean, why does Israel want the land? And I think that's kind of beside the question. The fact is, on the ground, there's military occupation, there's kids that are being detained. And regardless on why it's disputed, it is disputed, and we have to deal with that reality.
Mm-hmm. And, you say they've been there for three decades, so that's, 1990?
Yep, they have.
And what was the circumstances that caused them to leave the Indian-occupied area?
Well, that's a really good question. A lot of the cases of people that I talked to, it was, people in their family had been arrested or physically assaulted or their house, in some cases, even houses burned down to the ground. So for a lot of people, it just wasn't even possible to stay. They had to leave, and they didn't think that this was going to be long term. So, you have cases where people are just, completely distanced from family members that are now in IOK, and, dads and mothers that are in what is called AJK, Azad Jammu and Kashmir, which is technically on the Pakistani side.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought that the Red Cross, Red Crescent, some of these agencies would be at least in touch there, but the people you visited said they had had no one come to see them.
Yeah, they haven't been able to get in. We, after that, something that was, raised during the human rights delegation, with Jonathan Kutab, Karen Rodman, and Zafar Bangash and myself, And we were like, well, why aren't they in IOK? You know, they're supposed to be in disputed regions, even if a country doesn't necessarily let them in. You know, they fight back and they say, well, this isn't, you know, this isn't political. We're trying to meet people's basic needs. And they've been able to get into Palestine. So I can honestly not give you an honest answer why they aren't in IOK. And I don't necessarily think it's their own fault, but I think that India has put up a lot of barriers to them being able to get in and set up infrastructure in Indian occupied Kashmir.
We're speaking to Michaela Leavis, and the article is in the Toronto Star Sunday. Of course, it's, you can use the web and find the article, My Christmas in Kashmir Refugee Camps. You know, you point out something which I've been struck by, and I know others who've begun to look into this issue. Canada had quite a role in the original attempt to resolve the problem of Kashmir. The United Nations took it up, and the Secretary General at the time was General McNaughton from Canada.
Exactly. So it's been many decades that the Kashmiri people have been waiting for this plebiscite or referendum to take place, and Canada was instrumental in that role to say that they deserve the right to self-determination. So it's
they called for it. It even had it worked on it extensively over years to a method of resolving it in a peaceful, democratic way.
Exactly. And I mean, we can play all these politics, oh, it's Pakistan's, it's India's fault, but the reality is, as an indigenous population, they have the right to self-determination. So we can say, you know, we can place blame or use the scapegoat on whoever we want, but the reality comes down that, you know, indigenous people have the right to self-determination, and that should have been held decades ago through the referendum.
Well, and the United Nations has this issue, as I think lawyers say, they've seized on this. It comes up every annually at the United Nations.
Yeah, for a couple hours.
Yes, but you know, I mean, that's while it clearly we seem to have a crisis in that we have great powers who don't care to address it, but it doesn't go away. They acknowledge that they're not addressing it. They're certainly not working to resolve it. But now we have kind of a new crisis, and people you spoke to are part of it, which is the decision by the Indian government to basically change their constitution and change the authority in Kashmir to make it much basically more direct and a sort of a governor general approach. And this has impacted the people that you spoke with. Can you talk about that?
100%. People are completely aware. I assume you're referring to more broadly the Citizen Amendment Act that says, you know, it's similar to the new state bill in Palestine that says Muslims and Arabs, not generally, you know, Muslims in general aren't going to be considered as having full citizens.
Well, yes, that's the. I'm sorry. Actually, that's the second crisis. It was a year. You're quite right. Which just shows that the situation is worsening. Although there was also the decision to basically alter the constitution and have direct rule there in Kashmir. They replaced even their own.
You're talking about the
their own puppet. You could call them, I suppose, people, and. But it's also impacted those who are outside, who are diaspora in the other Kashmir, and they are. I think you said they have problems now with communications, which they didn't have previous.
100%. And I mean, when you're in I think I outlined this, hopefully pretty clearly in the article, that people in the refugee camp specifically, I visited four technically, because two are kind of two separate camps, but they're under the same name. I visited Ambor, Manish Payan, and Toda camp. And so in all of those camps, or specifically in Ambora and Tota, I can definitely say there was no communication since August 5th, since the lockdown of communication because of India. I mean, they lost communications. And because you have so many families that are completely separated geographically and emotionally, socially, it's been really tough. It's been, you know, basically 6 months where they've had no communication with their children, with their aunts, with their any family members whatsoever. I also talked to some people outside of what, you know, we call refugee camps, or what they call refugee camps, but also can be just considered displaced persons camps, because, of course, under international law, to be deemed a refugee, you have to have fled your own country. And because they don't consider IOK as being, they don't consider Kashmir as, some people don't consider Kashmir as being under Indian occupation. A lot of Kashmiris don't. They don't want to define themselves as refugees, right? Because that would give precedent to India to take more of the land, right? Yeah.
I noticed that in your article. I really hope people will read it, by the way, because inevitably these things are not simple to talk about, because there are these geopolitical issues such as recognition of the authority. And there are subtleties there which, you know, an outsider wouldn't pick up immediately just hearing, well, there are people here and we should give them this label. It doesn't follow if you know what the stakes are between states.
Exactly what undertaking that label means. And we're talking about 40,000 people here since, you know, 1989.
Now, in Azad Jammu and Kashmir, did you get a sense of, are they optimistic? Were they hopeful? How do they, when they talk to you about this issue, what sense do you get from them?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on what your kind of circumstances are. I think a lot of people in the refugee camps that fled IOK from 89 onwards, they're not hopeful, and I get a very different sense from Palestinians as opposed to Kashmiris. Of course, a lot of Palestinians are, you know, desperate for freedom, desperate for justice. But I get an even more dire kind of emotion derived from the Kashmiris, just because they haven't had as much international attention. They haven't had, you know, you Google Palestine and immediately, even in like our research database, you get, you know, hundreds of thousands of articles that you put into, you know, Ryerson or York Library, and you don't get that many results. So just in general, they haven't had that much attention. So in general, I think that they, you know, they're holding on hope, but at this point it's been, you know, 70 plus years, and they don't have a lot of hopefulness towards the future, because people haven't made up their mind or their heart or their, you know.
Well, I think there's some hope based on the fact that finally somebody has gone there and written about it, and it's Michaela Levis, and the article is titled My Christmas in Kashmir Refugee Camps, as Toronto Star this past Sunday. Michaela, thank you very much for joining us, and we hope we can talk to you more about this subject.
100%. Thank you so much, Bill.
All right. Talk again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. We're on SoundCloud and Facebook, The Taylor Report.